We always recommend Shopify. It took us from an idea to a real business. We got set up, I think, in less than a day. With very little effort, we could just focus on the supply chains and the product development. Shopify gives us the ability to customize without the complexity. We can change something without introducing fragility or having to pay a developer. We're Thirsty Turtle, and we leveled up our business with Shopify.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/au.
Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
Usually, unexplained things are scary and dangerous. I mean, possibly being dangerous is what makes them creepy much of the time. But as you'll see tonight with these stories, sometimes the unexplained is very, very deadly. Welcome back to Unexplained Encounters. I'm Darkness Prevails, and I'm here to share real people's allegedly true scary stories of the unknown with you. Tonight I've got stories about Wendigo attacks, a real-life version of Silent Hill but with sand, and something that slaughtered a prized goat. If you have a scary story of the unexplained, and you want me to narrate it on the show, just send it to me at darkstories.org. And while you're at it, leave a follow and review of Unexplained Encounters on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Thank you. Now, let's begin. I spent the weekend with a family friend. Needless to say, I'm not going back. From Colonel Howard. This traumatic experience occurred in northern Michigan in late 2018 when I was 13, so about 6 years ago as of writing this. Me, my mom, and my grandmother, and my stepdad all planned a weekend vacation to visit a friend whom my mom had met that past summer while traveling the UP, or Upper Peninsula. We had a week to prepare, and to say I wasn't thrilled about this trip would have been an understatement and a half, as I was not a social kid, and I'm still not a social person now. This was early November, and Red Dead Redemption 2 had just released. I was not about to leave it for a weekend over some random woman my mom had met not 5 months prior. We lived in the southern regions of Michigan, so the drive up there took about 7 hours, and I was losing my mind sitting in that cramped car for all that time. I kept myself occupied, switching between Dinosaur Simulator on Roblox, watching YouTube, taking naps, typical road trip fare. All three of my family members were trying their hardest to get me excited for the trip, mentioning the nice house and the amazing scenery, the family dog too, and the local town, but I didn't care that much. I wanted to stay home, but sadly that wasn't an option. After an agonizing 7 hours, we arrived at this admittedly nice house, which sat right in the middle of a pretty big clearing, a few miles from the nearest town. The place was really nice. The big house sat right in the center, with a decent-sized storage shed by the tree line right across from the front of the house. And it was really quiet, with the occasional bird chirping or woodland critter scampering across the forest floor. Allow me to explain a bit of the layout. You walk up to the front porch, which is about 6 feet off the ground. You walk through the front door and you're met with two staircases. Left, which goes up to the main floor, and the right, which goes down to the basement. You walk up to the main floor and you're in the living room. On the right is a hallway to the bedrooms, and on your left is a sliding door which leads to a pretty big side deck that was used for cookouts. And left of the sliding door is the kitchen. With all that in mind, let's continue. We were greeted by the friend, who I'll call Sarah for this story, her husband Blake, their 4-year-old son Tyler, and their dog Blitz. It was only just afternoon, so there was plenty of daylight left. We unpacked our stuff from the trunk, which wasn't much, a few outfits and some hygiene things, snacks and my grandma's fan she took everywhere she went. Blitz was the first to greet us directly, prancing down the stairs and across the driveway towards us, his tail wagging. He was a German Shepherd Husky mix. So think a German Shepherd with the personality of a Husky. He was as friendly as can be, and actually made me feel a bit better about the few days ahead. But that hope quickly faded upon the sight of Tyler. Throughout my entire life, even now, I've had a disdain for younger kids. Loud, whiny, messy, annoying little creatures. I tried to let my comfort from Blitz overpower my annoyance with the kid's existence, but it was impossible. So I asked my mom and grandma if they could keep Tyler away from me as much as possible. And they actually said they would. That night, we all sat around a bonfire for a few hours. Well, not really a bonfire, but more like a fire in a barrel. Everyone was talking and laughing, and I was sitting there on my phone watching Rango. When the movie reached a quiet moment in the story, I noticed everyone around me was also quiet and looking in one direction. I took out my earbuds to hear Blitz growling, so I looked over at him. He was staring across the property at the woods near the back side of the house, which was pitch black. He raised up as his growling grew lower and more intimidating, and the fur on his back seemed to stand on end. His eyes were locked on something beyond the light of the house, which we could not see, and I was terrified of what could be right there, just out of the light, watching us. This spook prompted everyone to quickly retreat to the house, and Blitz followed us with no hesitation. We kept the fire running so we could see if whatever or whoever was there decided to show themselves. But unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, nothing appeared. Blitz was glued to the side door. He stood there for at least an hour, watching the side door and occasionally growling. Thankfully, the door was locked, and there were thick curtains hung there, so no one could peek inside. Everyone was in the basement discussing the trespasser, theorizing what it could be. A man? A cougar? Maybe a wolf or a bear? Any of those ideas were valid, but we didn't know. By midnight, Blitz had calmed down, and we all went to bed. I slept horribly, imagining what could be there stalking us. I was awoken by the sound and smell of cooked bacon, and I immediately sat up and went to ask for some. But sadly, it was bacon coated in a syrup so sweet, my appetite vanished. Not my kind of thing. I then asked everyone what they thought was outside last night. Everybody had a different idea. My mom and stepdad thought it was a man. Sarah thought it was a wolf, and Blake said a bear. But I thought it was a coyote, since I was terrified of them from when I grew up in Tennessee. That day was when things really started to get strange, making me doubt it was a coyote. There were claw marks on a few of the trees in the direction that Blitz had been growling at the night before, but no footprints that might suggest who the culprit may have been. But the claw marks themselves were about 6 feet off the ground. So we concluded that the cause of our fear was a black bear, and we moved on. We were all still anxious if the bear might come back, so we stayed inside that day. Everyone was chatting up a storm in the basement, and I sat on the couch with Blitz, eating some chips and watching YouTube on the TV. We were just chilling, when suddenly Blitz shot up and looked over at the kitchen, and as if on cue, we heard a scraping noise coming from the kitchen. Blitz started to growl, so I slowly stood up, and I began to creep over to the kitchen. I realized the noise was coming from outside. I immediately panicked, because the sound was coming from between the wall between the stove and hood. That area outside was about 8 feet up. The sounds were like some claws being dragged across the wood, like large claws, scratching the wall only a few feet away from me. I quietly crept away from the kitchen, into the living room, down the stairs, and back to the basement, where everyone was still talking and hanging out. I must have looked visibly frightened, because everyone stopped talking and looked right at me. And I told them what I heard. Something was scratching the wall outside the kitchen, and it was above the stove. I asked them what could be that tall to reach that spot. So my stepdad and Blake both got up and went to the door, looking outside to see what was making the noise. But they didn't find anything. That part of the house is visible from the front porch, so they would have seen what was making the noise. But whatever it was had run off by then. Blitz and I stayed in the basement with everyone else for the rest of the day. I genuinely considered sleeping with a knife, because I was so paranoid after that, scared that whatever it was could be right outside at any point, and I wouldn't know, not until it was too late. Later in the evening, we were walking Blitz outside, when, out of nowhere, his head locked on a part of the woods to our left, and before any of us could react, he bolted into the woods after whatever he saw, barking and snarling as he vanished into the shrubs. My stepdad and Blake both ran into the house and came back out with guns. My stepdad's Canik 10mm and Blake's AR-15. They chased into the woods after Blitz, who was so far away that we couldn't hear him anymore. My mom, grandmother, and Sarah were panicking. Tyler was crying, and I was just stunned. I knew whatever Blitz charged after was the same thing that was scratching the kitchen wall, and I knew it could be no simple black bear. We didn't see either of the men or Blitz for the rest of the night. Everyone was crying, worried that they could be hurt or worse. They did try to call the police, but they wrote us off by saying it was probably an animal, and that the men would probably find their way back soon. They told us to stay inside. My mom did, however, leave the side door unlocked, in case the men came back, and that is a decision that will haunt me for the rest of my days. I wanted them to leave it shut, but I knew they'd be mad if I suggested the idea of leaving my stepdad and Blake out in the cold all night. So I decided not to protest, although I should have. That night would become the worst and most traumatizing night of my life, and I would give anything to forget it. But it seared into my brain. I couldn't sleep that night. I stayed up, lying on the couch for probably 3 hours straight, trying my hardest to fall asleep. But it was impossible. I was wide awake the entire time, which, looking back on it, was probably a good thing, for the sake of me staying alive. Around 2 a.m. or so, I heard the sound of footsteps on the deck, walking up the stairs. My relief was quickly overtaken by terror when I noticed that the footsteps weren't coming from shoes or boots, but something that sounded like hooves, like if a horse had been walking up the stairs. The footsteps were loud, so whatever it was big. And it was big enough that it only took 4 steps before it was on the deck, and that staircase had 15 steps. Thankfully, we had the curtains closed, so it couldn't see in, and there were no lights or visible moon, so no silhouette either. I heard it walk around on the deck, heard it smelling the air, like it was searching for something. Its sniffs sounded similar to the T-Rex sniffs in Jurassic Park. They sounded like they belonged to a large animal. I then heard it moving the table around, scraping its hands on the grill. It sounded like it was curious. I wanted to get up to grab a knife or alert the others, but my eyes were glued to the curtains, and my butt was glued to the couch. I didn't even want to breathe in fear that it would somehow hear me. I almost had a heart attack when I heard the thing walk towards the sliding door, and I practically had a heart attack when I remembered that my mom had, in fact, left the sliding door unlocked. So, like a little kid, I hid under the covers with only my eyes peeking out, and as I expected, the thing started fiddling with the door handle, and eventually, it figured it out. I heard the door slide open. Cold air blew in from the night, filling the room with a deafening silence and eeriness. The thing pushed its head into the curtains, and they eventually parted, revealing a dark silhouetted face, followed by the sound of clanking and scraping against the doorway, which apparently came from antlers. The thing pushed its head in through the curtains extremely slowly, almost like it was trying to create a dramatic entrance. I started to cry quietly, the hardest I've ever cried in my life, though, but I made darn sure I didn't make any noise. Thanks to a small nightlight on the wall, its face became more visible, and I could make out more features. Features I wish I couldn't see. Its face was a skull, with bloodied patches of skin and/or fur, and the snout of the skull looked like it had been broken off to form sharp teeth-like protrusions. It didn't seem to have eyes, just dark, empty circles, soulless little circles. Its antlers were huge. I couldn't count how many points they had. No wonder they got caught in the doorway. It slowly crept further into the house, and I could see that it was walking on all fours. It clearly was too tall to walk on two legs in this house. Its claws definitely looked like they could make a loud scratching sound outside a kitchen wall. I was hit with this putrid stench of rot. You know the awful smell that rotted store-bought chicken has after it's been sitting in your fridge for too long. Imagine that, with a hint of feces thrown in there for good measure. I could see it sniffing around on the ground and in the air. I don't know what nose it was using to smell with, because it didn't appear to have a nose. It was still coming towards me, now no more than 10 feet away. I could hear its breathing, and it sounded like it was sick, like it had tuberculosis and was having trouble taking any breath at all. I could make out more of its body. It was skinny for the most part, its bones visible through its skin. I would have felt bad for it if it didn't look like a demon sent straight from hell. After what felt like ages, the creature finally made it fully inside the house, allowing me to see its entire form. Hooves, deer-shaped legs, a starved abdomen. This thing was clearly hungry, I thought. It slowly made its way over to me, getting closer and closer until it was practically in my personal space. I don't even want to describe the emotions I was feeling at the time. I'm getting emotional just having to describe this. I was bawling my eyes out at the time, sure that it was the end for me and this thing was going to kill me, like it surely did the men and the dog. And yet it didn't. It stood there, seemingly inspecting me, scanning my body as well as the surrounding room. The smell made me want to throw up, but I guess my adrenaline kept my gut down. It moved its head right next to mine, only a few inches away from me. It knew I was there. It had to. I would imagine something like this would have impeccable senses. My guess is it was toying with me, wanting to scare me half to death before it sent me to my death. So I just closed my eyes and accepted that I would soon disappear into the night, no one knowing where I had gone, no one ever finding my remains. I think my life actually flashed before my eyes. I felt the creature put a hand on my stomach, over the blanket, like it was once again trying to scare me, and it certainly succeeded. Then, as if God himself was watching over me that moment, I heard a sound coming from the basement. My grandmother, her steps filling the dead silence in the room. The creature cocked its head towards the sounds, and in the span of a few seconds, it turned, bolted out the door, and leapt over the rails of the deck, vanishing into the dark. I sat up immediately and turned around to see my grandma turning the corner into the living room, seeing me sitting there with the sliding door wide open. She looked worried and asked why the door was open, and according to her, I was in shock so badly that I couldn't answer her. She walked over to the door, closed it, and locked it without hesitation, saying, "If those boys come back, they can just knock." She told me she would stay with me for the night as I looked genuinely scared about something, and I eventually collapsed on the couch, falling asleep at last. She must have fallen asleep too, because I was awakened that morning by Sarah's ear-piercing scream of terror. My grandmother and I practically jumped off the couch together in shock, and we looked to where Sarah was, and we were greeted with the most disturbing sight. My stepdad and Blake were on the deck by the door. All over the deck by the door. The police were called. They actually wanted to do something this time, now that we had bodies for them. The two men had been killed, mutilated, and without going into too much detail, Let's just say they were eaten. Bits and pieces of their bodies were gone. There were signs of gnawing in places. And their guns weren't anywhere to be found. Tyler was fast enough to catch a peek at the scene and started to cry. That was understandable. My mom vomited upon seeing the bodies and was also profusely crying, kneeling over her dead husband. My grandmother was crying as well, but I was more in shock rather than sad. I did cry, but there was something else in me, horror that my body had trouble reacting to. The police closed off the area for investigation, and the place was thoroughly searched. But there was no sign of the assailant, and we were all sent home, Sarah and Tyler with us. The next day we were called. A dog had wandered onto the property, limping with a huge claw mark along his side. He was covered in blood, but he was alive. Old Blitz made it through. He was taken to a vet, where he thankfully recovered, and was sent to our home in the comfortable region of southern Michigan, far away from any big forest. We don't talk about the incident anymore. Sarah and Tyler sold their house and moved to the city, and we've never traveled to the Upper Peninsula anymore, or to any forested areas for that matter. We're now all too scarred for that. My mom and grandmother act slightly different since then. Not so cheery as they used to be, nor am I. My mom hasn't remarried, and my grandmother helped us move to North Dakota where she lives, so we can all be together and be far away from that traumatic event. Blitz unfortunately passed away last summer in 2024. I still occasionally have nightmares about that monster, which I now know to most likely be the Wendigo. I have a respect for him, a fear to step foot in the woods.
Kaffee in seiner besten Form. Mit Cubo wird jeder Kaffee auf Knopfdruck zum Genussmoment. Denn mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo genießt du feinsten Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Vollmundige Aromen dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie und über 17 Sorten Kaffee für jeden Geschmack. Erlebe Premium-Kaffee schon ab 29 Euro. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche rote Tafeläpfel aus Deutschland. 2 Kilo für nur 1,79 Euro. Oder Mini-Roma-Rispentomaten. 300 Gramm für nur 1,11 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Peeking from the Bedroom. From Shadow People Magnet. This happened last month. Can't remember the exact day, but I think that's not important. Note, I don't use and have never used drugs, alcohol, or anything else, so none of them had anything to do with this experience. It was late at night, probably around midnight if not past that. I live alone and always stay awake nights. That's just how I've been ever since I was 12 or 13. I was sitting on the living room floor, where I always sit to be honest. I find it comfortable. I hadn't meditated in a very long time, and I honestly missed it, so I decided to have some meditation there and then. I took a more comfortable sitting position, put on some headphones, and picked suitable music for the session. When everything was set, I clicked play, holding my eyes. After about 20 minutes, which is a normal and fine length for me, I laid on my back on the floor and just breathed, enjoying the silence and the calm moment. Now I should explain the apartment's layout a bit. From the front door, there's a straight and short corridor, which also goes through the living room, all the way to the back door. It's a tiny space. The apartment itself is quite small. You can see straight to the back door from the front door. In the middle of the corridor, when standing in the living room, there's two doors. The bathroom door on the left, and slightly open bedroom door on the right. While I'm lying on my back in the living room floor, my head is on the corridor part. I was looking at the ceiling when I suddenly got the feeling I needed to turn my head to the left, towards the front door. I do just that, and instantly, I see this dark, featureless head slowly pushing out from the bedroom, and it's tall. The head is at the top part of the doorframe, and the figure is clearly bending down to not hit his head. It didn't have eyes, no eye holes, no nose, mouth, or ears, or hair. Not a regular face shape at all. Nothing like that. Very typical shadow person. You see, I've seen them before in my life, at different times and places. I knew it was looking at me. Its head was slightly tilted. Right after it notices that I can see it and that I'm staring back at it, it pulls away real fast, back into the darkness of my bedroom. It doesn't hit the door frame nor the door. It's perfectly soundless. I actually smiled to myself, feeling a bit bad for scaring the thing away. It always makes me sad when they get scared of me when I'm not a person they would need to be afraid of. Like I said before, it's not my first shadow person encounter, and hopefully not the last. I've never really been afraid of them, not even as a kid when I didn't know what they were. I saw my first one about 25 years ago, and none of them have ever tried to harm or scare me in any way either. Not even during one occasion when one got right in my face to stare at me when I was pretending to be asleep. The ones I've encountered so far have always been curious, shy, and friendly. They're more like shy kids than anything. Prize-winning goat. From Sebastian. This is my dad's story. My dad was around 12 years old at the time, so it was sometime in the late 80s, and he was living with his dad. They were all over the place, as his dad was a trucker, but one of his relatives was nearby, and his dad wanted to go see her. She lived on the slope end of a mountain out by Death Valley near his hometown. When they got there, they welcomed them in with hugs and food. They had this beautiful snow-white goat tied to a post in the front yard, which faced the mountain. It was a small house, only one story, a four-bedroom place with a picture window in the living room and a TV. His dad ended up arranging to stay the night there, and my dad had no problem with this either. His father was not a good man. He was very violent and took nothing from no one. So he never argued with him if he'd already made up his mind. Sometime around 11 p.m., they were all in the living room watching TV. It was my dad, two of his cousins, and his aunt. They started to hear something weird in the front yard, and my dad, as well as his two cousins, opened the picture window curtain and saw the goat being ripped apart by what appeared to be a pack of wolves. His dad grabbed his 12-gauge shotgun and threw the door open, screaming at the beasts. He pointed at the ground and put a shell in the floor. Most of the wolves ran, but one of them stayed, and it stared at his dad, so he pointed the shotgun right at it. That's when they saw something my dad can only say was a werewolf. My dad and his cousins watched from the window as this giant wolf stood on its hind legs, mouthed something, then turned around, dropping to all fours. It ran up the mountain faster than he thought any animal could move. His dad was white as a ghost when he walked inside. They locked everything, all the windows and doors, and they stayed up all night, only leaving after sunrise. A good 3 years later, my dad and his friends are talking about a fair-like thing that was happening around Halloween. It was something they'd all wanted to do, and they saved up the money for the tickets and went together. All of them knew he was afraid of werewolves, and they told him to go through this 3D maze with uneven ground that made you feel off balance. It was called the Wolfman's Lair. There were people jumping out, small rooms with people that had chainsaws and tasers. As they were walking, some girls who were terrified joined their group, and they kept walking. It was fun until they got to the short hallway with an office at the end, and a man at his desk with a window at the back of the room. They stopped because they were unsure if he was stuck in the maze or if he was an actor. My dad asked what he was doing, but he got no response. Then the moon shined through the window in the room, and he started to act weird. He began to scream and roll around on the ground. Then my dad watched this guy turn into a weird half-man, half-wolf thing. Then he was out of sight for a couple of seconds, only to jump right back out at my dad, who responded with the hardest punch he could muster, hitting him square in the jaw. He felt it crunch under his fist, and he felt bad right away. They got escorted out, and they were told that the transformation was fake, part of an act. They were banned for life after that, and my dad got an earful from the group. But he's never seen anything like it since. Sand in my sheets. From Chris. I need to preface this by saying I have excellent memory. I'm not saying photographic or anything like that, but I can remember things from when I was very young, with unusual clarity. My parents used to show me off at parties. Chris, tell them about your second birthday. And I would recite details about the cake, the guests, even what cartoon was on TV that morning. So when I tell you I remembered what happened between ages 3 and 5, I'm not reconstructing or filling in blanks. I'm telling you that I remember. What I'm about to describe to you were not dreams. I know people will think they were childhood nightmares or sleep paralysis, whichever explanation makes you feel comfortable. But dreams don't work the way these did. You wake up from dreams. You fall asleep before having a dream. And dreams don't leave physical evidence. These incidents stopped almost immediately after my 5th birthday, and they never came back. I'm 34 now, and I still often think about them. It's not really one of those kinds of things you can put behind you, and you'll understand why very soon. The first time I remember it happening clearly was when I was 3, maybe 3 and a half. We lived in a split-level house somewhere in the Midwest. I won't say exactly where. My bedroom was at the end of the hall. My parents' room was next to mine, bathroom across from theirs. Normal suburban layout. I'd gotten up to pee. Little kids do that, waking up in the middle of the night, needing to go to the bathroom. I padded down to my parents' room and woke up my dad. He was always the lighter sleeper. I told him, "Daddy, I need to go to the potty." He mumbled something, got up, opened the bathroom door for me, and turned on the light. He would always wait right outside the door for me to get done, so that I wouldn't get scared. The bathroom had this harsh overhead fixture that made everything too bright. I recall having to squint when I walked in. I then did my business, washed my hands like I'd been taught. Then I opened the door to go back to my dad. But when I did, I didn't step into the hallway. The door opened up into darkness. Not regular darkness like your hallway at night, but complete dark. I stood there in the rectangle of bathroom light, looking out at nothing. The air smelled different, like it was dry and metallic. I took a step forward, expecting to hit the hallway wall. Instead, my foot sank into something soft. On my bare feet, it felt like sand. Coarse sand working its way between my toes. And when I looked down, that's what I saw. I was barefoot at the time, wearing my dinosaur pajamas, and somehow I was standing there in sand. I looked up then. I didn't see my usual ceiling or walls, just a sky that wasn't quite black. There was a moon, but it was bigger than the usual moon and too low to the ground. It was also red, not that orange red like the harvest moon, but more like watered down blood. It gave off just enough light to see that I was in a desert that went on as far as I could see. I need to emphasize something here. Though I was about 3 years old, fully awake, knowing that this was wrong, but I also knew, with that weird certainty that little kids sometimes have, that I simply needed to keep walking, that if I kept walking, everything would be okay, that I would find my way back. So I walked. The sand was everywhere, some areas packed hard, others soft enough that I'd sink to my ankles. There was no wind and no sound, except my own breathing and footsteps. The crimson moon didn't move in the sky. I'm not sure how long I walked. Time felt different there, stretched out and compressed at the same time. Eventually, the sand under my feet started to feel firmer, more solid, and then it felt like carpet. The darkness began to lighten a bit, and before long I could make out walls materializing around me. Then, I was standing in our hallway. The bathroom door was right there, the light still on, my dad standing in the doorway looking confused. I remember him looking down at me. "Where'd you go, buddy?" I turned around and you weren't there. I didn't know how to explain it, I was only 3. I just said I got lost, and he tucked me back into bed. But I knew I'd been walking in that desert for at least 20 minutes. To my dad, he acted like I'd only been gone for a few seconds. Then, another event happened 2 weeks later. This time I was fully awake, playing with blocks in my room. I reached under my bed to get a block that had rolled away, and when I pulled my head back out, the room was gone. I was in the same dark place with the same crimson moon and the same endless sand. This time I found something else, though. Cliffs. They rose out of the sand like walls, but when I touched them, I remember they felt like cold metal under my hands. They were smooth and went up further than I could see. I followed the cliff face for what felt like hours, my hand trailing along the surface, until suddenly I was back in my room, my hand pressed against my bedroom wall, and my mom calling me for lunch. These episodes happened maybe once a month, occasionally more. I never knew what would trigger them. Sometimes it was as simple as walking through a doorway. Sometimes I would blink and be there. Once it happened when I crawled under the kitchen table to get a crayon, and I emerged in that desert instead of to the kitchen. I tried to explain it to my parents, but they thought I was describing some nightmares I had. "You have such vivid dreams, sweetie," my mom would say. But I wasn't sleeping. I was awake every single time it happened. The worst one, the one that still makes me check under my bed at 34 years old, happened just before my 5th birthday, so luckily it was one of the last. I'd gotten into bed normally. It was probably around 8 p.m., still light outside in summer. I remember pulling my sheets up over my head like kids do, making a little tent, and when I pushed them back down, I wasn't in my bed anymore. I was lying in sand in that dark place, still covered by sheets. The red moon was directly overhead. I sat up, and my sheets fell away, disappearing into the sand like they never existed. I had a choice: stay where I was and hope I'd snap back to my room, or get up and walk like I always did. I chose to walk. I think that may have been a mistake, or maybe that's what saved me. I went on walking for maybe 5 minutes when I found another cliff wall. This one was different, though. There were markings on it, either scratches or weird symbols. I couldn't tell in the red light. I was studying them when I heard it. Steps, but not normal steps. There was a deep and heavy step, then a drag, step, then a drag, like something with one good leg and one that wouldn't work right. And I heard breathing too, wet and ragged breathing. There was also another sound that made my 3-year-old mind go blank with terror. Teeth clicking and grinding, like someone chattering from cold but aggressively, possibly even hungrily. I ran, not looking back. I just ran along the cliff face as fast as my little legs could take me. The sound followed, though. Step, drag, getting faster. The breathing got louder, the teeth clicking frantically now, like whatever owned them was getting excited. I couldn't see where I was going. The cliff curved, then suddenly, it wasn't there anymore, and I ran straight off an edge that I didn't know was coming. I fell through red-tinted darkness, and I hit sand hard enough to knock the wind out of me. I rolled down a dune, and then I was under my sheets, in my bed, in my room, safe. But it wasn't the same, because there was sand in my bed and in my pajamas and in my hair, even between my toes. Coarse, red-tinted sand that definitely hadn't been there when I got into bed earlier. There was a lot of it, like someone had dumped a bucket of sand right under my covers. I lay there, completely still for about an hour, too scared to move, scared that if I did anything, I'd be right back there. I was horrified at the idea of that thing with the dragging step following me again. Eventually, when nothing happened, I carefully got out of bed and I tried to scrape all the sand onto the floor. There was so much of it. I used my hands, my pillowcase too, anything to get it out of my bed. The next morning, my mom was furious. "Chris, what is all this?" There was sand everywhere, all over my carpet, ground into the fibers. She made me sweep it up, vacuum, then sweep again. She kept asking where it had come from. Did I bring it in from the playground? Did I carry it home in my pockets and she simply didn't notice? I tried to tell her about the dark place, about falling into the sand. She thought I was making up stories to avoid getting into trouble. But she was confused too. We lived nowhere near a beach. The playground at my preschool had wood chips, not sand. There was no logical explanation for pounds of sand to just spawn in my bedroom. She must have talked to my dad about it, because that night they both sat me down, asking me very seriously about where the sand came from. I think they were concerned about someone coming into my room, or that maybe I was sneaking out at night. I stuck to my story. I mean, I was just a little kid. I told them about the dark place, the red moon, the thing that chased me. They exchanged the kind of looks parents do when they think their kid might need therapy. But here's the thing. After my 5th birthday, it stopped. Completely. No more dark place, no more red moon, and no more sand. Like whatever door I'd been accidentally walking through had been permanently closed. My parents have never brought it up again. The sand incident became one of those family mysteries that no one talks about. Remember when Chris's room was full of sand that one time? So weird. And that's it. Subject closed. I've spent years trying to find rational explanations. Maybe I was sleepwalking and somehow got sand from somewhere. Maybe I had some kind of childhood psychotic episodes that resolved themselves. Maybe it was elaborate false memories, though that doesn't explain the sand. But I know what I experienced. I know I walked in that place and I know something was coming for me. It was real enough to follow me home, even if it was just sand. Even now I sometimes dream about it. Actual dreams, the kind you wake up from. And let me tell you, when I do wake up from them, I'm so, so happy. The Thing in the Water, from Robus Bobus. Summer 1998, I turned 15. My parents had just gotten divorced and neither of them wanted to deal with me while they were sorting out their new lives. That's how I ended up at my grandparents' place on the Gulf Coast of Florida for what was supposed to be just a few weeks, quote unquote. But that turned into 4 months. My grandparents were retired and lived in one of those small beach towns that tourists drive through on their way to somewhere better. I'm not going to name it specifically, for the sake of privacy. But if you've been down to Florida's west coast, I think you'll know that type. There's a handful of seafood restaurants and some rental shops. And boy, are there a ton of retirees. Their house was a quarter mile from the beach. It was a little yellow ranch house with halluy windows that never quite closed all the way. I didn't know anyone there, but school was out for the summer. Even if it wasn't, I would not have been enrolled there anyway, since it was supposed to be temporary. The local kids had their own groups, their own spots, their own inside jokes from growing up together. And I was just the weird kid from up north, staying with his grandparents. So I walked the beach. Every day, sometimes twice a day, usually early morning before the sun got too brutal, or in the evening when it cooled down. Just walking, throwing shells, thinking about how badly everything had fallen apart. My grandparents did their best, God bless their souls. They bought me a bike and suggested I join the summer basketball league at the rec center. But I wasn't interested. The beach was easier. The beach didn't require me to talk to anyone. Except myself, I guess. The night it happened was in late July. I had just gotten off the phone with my mom. She'd called me to tell me that she and Dad had decided to make the divorce final. No chance of reconciliation. She said it like she was telling me about a dentist appointment. So basic and matter-of-fact, a done deal. I knew it was coming, but hearing it spoken to me like that from my own mother, it hit different. I went to my room, the spare room with a day bed and my grandfather's old golf trophies, and I cried. Not sobbing or anything overly dramatic, but quiet tears that made my chest hurt. Around midnight, I couldn't stand being in that room anymore. The house was quiet except for my grandfather snoring. I grabbed a flashlight from the kitchen drawer, but I didn't turn it on. I slipped out the sliding door, then out to the backyard. The moon was full that night, or close to it. Once I got to the beach, I didn't need the flashlight at all. The sand was almost white in the moonlight, and the gulf was calm, with these little waves barely breaking on the shore. I walked north like always, away from the fishing pier and the few bars that stayed open late. That direction, it was just sand and seagrass and the occasional beach house, dark for the night. The beach curved slightly, and after about 10 minutes, I couldn't see any lights from buildings anymore. Just moon and water and sand. I was thinking about where I'd end up living. Mom's new apartment in Ohio or Dad's place in Georgia. Neither of them really seemed to want me. I was just another thing to have to figure out, like who got the dining room set. I stopped walking and just stood there, looking out at the water, feeling sorry for myself. A sound then came from the water, maybe 30 yards out. Not a splash exactly, but more like something breaking the surface slowly, like when you stand up in a bathtub and the water runs off of you. I looked toward the sound. The moonlight on the water made it easy to see shapes and movement. At first, I thought it was a dolphin. We'd see them sometimes in the early morning. Their fins would cut through the water. But this wasn't moving like a dolphin. There was something standing in the water. The gulf is shallow for a long way out. Even 30 yards from shore, it can be just chest deep for people. But whatever this was standing far too tall for that. The silhouette looked like a person's upper body, but stretched out too far. The torso was quite long, like someone had grabbed a normal human shape and pulled it like taffy. It rose about 7 feet out of the water, swaying slightly with the current. I stood completely still, waiting for it to make sense. Maybe it was a pole or marker I'd never noticed before. Maybe some idiot was out there on stilts trying to scare people. But it wasn't rigid like a pole would be. There was fluidity to it, a subtle movement that wasn't just from the waves. It had a head, or something like a head, a rounded shape at the top that was turned in my direction. We stood there, me on the beach, it in the water. Perfectly still, except for its light swaying. The waves made these tiny slapping sounds in the sand. Somewhere behind me, probably in the seagrass, insects were chirping. These were normal night sounds, but it made what I was looking at feel even more wrong. I don't know how long I stayed like that. Maybe 30 seconds or maybe 2 minutes. Time goes weird when you're scared. And I was scared, even though it hadn't done anything threatening to me. It was just the wrongness of it. The way it was too tall and too still and clearly focused on me, even though I couldn't see any features in the dark silhouette. Then I got this chill. Not from the temperature. It was still probably 80 degrees out. This was a chill from the inside. From my brain finally processing that whatever this thing was, it was watching me. And it was big. It might have been watching before I even noticed. Maybe it had been there in the water every night I'd walked this beach, just far enough that I'd never noticed. My brain wanted me to leave. so I turned and started to walk back the way I'd come. Not running. Something told me not to run from this. I walked a normal pace, or at least I tried to. My legs wanted to move faster, but I forced them to stay as steady as possible. I made it maybe 50 feet before the urge to look back became overwhelming. Every instinct screamed at me to check if it was following, if it was coming out of the water to get me. But I still didn't look. Don't ask me how, but I knew that looking back would be a mistake somehow. The walk back to my grandparents' house felt like a punishment. Every sound behind me could have been footsteps. Every shadow could have been that stretched out shape coming towards me. But I didn't look back, not once. When I finally got to their backyard, I just went in the house. I stopped taking my walks for a while after that. My grandmother noticed too. She asked why I stopped. I told her I was going to get into reading instead. She was thrilled, even drove me to the library twice a week. That really helped, to be honest. A couple weeks later, I overheard my grandparents talking about something they'd heard on the local news. A tourist had allegedly gone missing, last seen swimming at night, a few miles up the beach from where I'd been. They found his clothes on the sand, but they never found him. Everyone thought it was a riptide. It happens every summer. Maybe. But riptides don't stand 7 feet out of the water and watch teenagers on the beach. If you're wondering what happened to me, I ended up living with my dad in Georgia. I didn't go back to my grandparents' place in Florida, and they died a few years later, within 6 months of each other. The deaths were unrelated to this story. My mom ended up selling their house. Sometimes I Google Earth that stretch of beach, following it north to where I stood that night. It looks so normal in the satellite photos. The sand and water and nothing else that you might expect. I live in Colorado now, about as far from the ocean as you can get. People ask why I don't like beach vacations, and I tell them I'm not a beach person, or that I hate getting sunburnt. They laugh and say everyone loves the beach. Well, not everyone. Freaky Time in Paris, from Baller 72. I was traveling with a friend in Europe, and we were going as cheap as possible. We stayed at hostels and even did some work stay places to make sure we had enough to cover almost 6 months. We had some pretty good times, and some really weird times. We were in Paris staying in a hotel for a couple nights before taking the train to Strasbourg. The place was pretty sketchy and seemed like an added wooden structure against a really old brick building. The part we were staying in had a long, badly lit hallway that had rooms on one side. The rooms had a small kitchen, which meant we wouldn't have to eat out all the time. When we got there, we went down the long, stuffy hall to our room. We were almost there when a door peeked open, then swung open wide. It was a woman who looked seriously happy to see us. She said she was cooking and needed to keep the door open, because the room was way too hot. She told us she was thankful she had someone she trusted in the place, because of what was happening. She said there was a crazy lady that comes into the hallway and just starts slamming doors, then stomps down the hallway, pounding on all the doors. She didn't know what the lady wanted. She figured she was just crazy. She had called for help, but the lady was gone when the manager came to check. That creeped us out, so we were very careful about coming into the hallway and pretty much ran down the dark hallway to our room. After a couple of days, we didn't hear or see that strange lady the woman had spoke of. We were hoping that we would leave without having to deal with the crazy lady, but we were wrong. It was the final night of our stay, and we would be taking the train really early in the morning. We got everything ready to go and went to bed. Then our alarm went off, and we got ready to head out. That's when we heard doors slamming down the hallway. It was hard enough to make the walls rattle each time. We wish we had some people to see what was happening, because we wouldn't dare open the door to check. We pushed a dresser up against the door. Then the banging stopped and the footsteps started. They weren't normal sounding, but more like someone was slowly marching. The footsteps stopped right outside our room. The two of us held our breaths when the banging started. No words, just banging. All at once it stopped. We expected to hear the footsteps leaving, but there was nothing. The lady was standing right outside our door for such a long time. It was silent while we waited for her to leave. We didn't want to make a sound. We knew she was there, though. We didn't know what she wanted, and we weren't going to open the door to find out. Sadly, we ended up missing our train. We called the office, but nobody answered. We finally got the courage to open the door, despite never hearing someone walk away. There was no one there. We headed out, but we had to go down the dark hallway. It was the creepiest moment of my life. The entire time I thought the crazy lady would jump out of a room at us. When we got out of that building, we were shaking. We were able to get a later train, and that wasn't so bad. The experience still makes me shudder. We had felt pretty confident about our travels through Europe until that happened. I'll always remember that long hallway, and the crazy lady we never saw that made us miss our train. And why did we never see her? Why didn't we hear her walk away? I'll let you wonder about that. There were some pretty crazy stories today. I don't usually like narrating stories where people are allegedly killed by the unexplained. They're very easy to disbelieve, and very hard to prove. Then again, proving these stories is not my job. My job is to entertain. And some stories are just creepy enough that they're too fun to pass up. I hope you enjoyed tonight's tales. Good night. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Unexplained Encounters. I've been your host, Darkness Prevails. And if you need some help relaxing with a comedic chill pill, check out my paranormal adult comedy podcast, Night Watchers, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. It's also on YouTube at youtube.com/nightwatcherspodcast. You'll find me and some guest hosts like the Oni Plays crew discussing about and joking about the paranormal and unexplained, and taking some quote-unquote real calls from people with paranormal problems. Till next time, everyone, stay safe out there and stay creepy, because this world is a strange one.